Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condover K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host,
It's Mr. Ben Errington.
And the brand new sort of co-host, sort of dude man. How's it going, Mr.
John Crennan? It's going well. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for coming on. Yeah, we've known each other for a little while now, and we know that you enjoy a horror movie every now and again.
I am partial.
You are partial. And then I think Ben was just saying before we start recording that he's been spying on you or something. I didn't quite catch that.
I've been spying on you, John, through the curtains.
He's been Instagram stalking me, yeah. That's good.
Exactly. More so than usual as well, you know, with October and all of his horror prompts.
I did too, really guys, too.
Liking every photo.
More than once, sometimes.
Double liking.
Yeah. I appreciate those likes. I need them. Yeah, and Ben spotted that I had posted about this movie and then asked me if I wanted to come on. And I said, yes, of course.
Get on a bloody podcast, mate. Come on. Just wheel you in. Come on. Another one.
Yeah.
So John, maybe just like a little bit of a background about yourself. Have you seen a horror movie before? Are you...
I have seen one or two. I've
got a bloody expert on the show. Jeez.
I'm not sure I'm going to be up to your standard of expertise, but we'll see.
Know, man. There's tons of stuff that you told me about over the years. So maybe let's give a quick rundown. So have you got a favorite horror movie or a least favorite or anything?
Yeah, my all-time favorite movie is Jaws, which a lot of people consider, some people don't really consider that a horror movie, but I think it is. So if people don't accept Jaws as an answer, I then go for my second, which is The Exorcist. Those are my two like all-time favorite movies, and they're quite different from one another, but I just think they're perfect films. So I'm definitely more of a kind of classic horror guy. A lot of the times I introduce myself as a horror fan, you know, when you're out talking to folk about horror movies, and they'll often say, have you seen X, Y, and Z? And it's generally the latest thing in the cinema, and I have almost never seen them. So it's classic horror is kind of more my thing. This is perfect.
Cool. Oh, yeah, good. So this will be right up your street then.
Well, I think we've got to consider Jaws a horror film. We've done that on this podcast. And, you know, for many people, it was a film that could have made everybody scared about going in the water, any water. Can't even put my hands in the sink.
He hasn't had a bath for years.
I haven't had a bath for 30 years, mate. Yeah. Wet wipes. Yeah. And they're bad for the environment. Just a flannel. Just a flannel.
Oh, they're terrible.
For the environment. Yeah. Don't flush them, Luke, for God's sake.
Why are they bad for the environment? What do they do? Is it the chemicals?
They're plasticky. They don't biodegrade.
Oh, okay.
Let's start a new podcast just about the horrors of the environment. Things that are the horrors for the environment. Yeah.
The thing with Jaws is that it kind of doesn't feel like a horror movie for the first maybe hour or so, because it's the music isn't quite horror music. It's got more of an adventure film sort of theme to it, feel to it. And then it sort of just gets increasingly horrific. And then there's the famous scene with when what's his face gets eaten. It's like, oh, this is a horror movie.
Yeah, it's like a buddy movie almost. You just want to be part of the crew, and it's all in Technicolor and it looks beautiful.
Yeah,
it's a stunning movie. It's absolutely perfect.
There are some really, really good genuine scares in that film, though, aren't there? Some really genuine.
Oh yeah, some absolute classics. The Ben Gardner's boat when you know, he's diving under the boat and the face appears under the water when he's getting the tooth out. It's one of the all-time classic jump scares, I think.
Yeah,
I also really like that dolly zoom. You know, Scheider looks into the beach. There's something in the water. Like you don't get good dolly zooms anymore, but that's pretty special.
Oh, it's a classic shot. Zoom.
Yeah. So, news then. We found out who our co-host is. His name is John.
Yep.
So hello.
The next section of the show is the news, Ben.
The bloody news, isn't it? The bloody news. So, just a couple of bits. So, James Wan's new horror film has been announced as being called Malignant. Unfortunately, that's kind of all we've got about it. I was hoping we'd get some plot details, but apparently everything's under wraps. It's officially his 10th feature, which, you know, for a director of, like, how old is he?
He's got a young face, hasn't he?
He's got a young face, yeah. He's probably early 40s, but that's a lot of features to have under your belt. And considering, like, he's a name director, you know, you see his name and you kind of know what to expect now.
Is this a Conjuring-verse film, or do we not know that either?
I don't know. So we've got the cast, and it's no one from the Conjuring-verse. Oh, actually, it's Ingrid Bisou. Is that... No. I thought that was maybe the actress who played the nun, but I'm mistaken. So that could be interesting. I've got literally nothing else. I'm sorry, guys. There's a little bit of news in there somewhere if you really dig for it.
There was another bit of news, wasn't Sam Raimi got announced that he's returning to horror this week, didn't he? That was just a few days ago. He is coming back to do a horror film.
Is he directing it, you mean?
Yeah, actually.
There we go, yeah. So
I don't
want to
jump in, I could be wrong, but you know, I heard that Sam Raimi is directing a horror movie.
I'm hopeful now.
Yeah, so am I.
Jump in. So, so just 2 days ago, Sam Raimi is going to dive back into the world of horror, agreeing to direct and produce an entry, horror anthology series, 50 States of Fright. So, you know, he'll still be directing something. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to be a feature, but who knows what that could open up, you know? There we go. Okay. Another bit of news I saw is that Doom 64, gaming news, horror gaming news, I guess. Doom 64 has been delayed, but is now a pre-order bonus for Doom Eternal, which comes out on PS4, which I think is like next March.
Is it going to be free? So, I think I saw some.
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be free. So we've got like an announcement trailer this dropped, so obviously it's just Doom 64, but I guess reskinned to look nice and shiny for PS4 and PC and Xbox One, which is quite exciting. I'm quite excited for Doom Eternal though, because Doom the recent reboot, well, the recent new game was insanely good.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. Yeah.
Have you played that, John? Have you?
What was the last one? I played Doom 3 on like the Xbox. Doom 3, that was the last one I played.
There's a newer one that came out 5 years ago or something now, and it sort of captures the sort of intense feel that was kind of missing from the franchise for a long time. The newer Doom game is a lot of fun. It's insane. It's brutal. It's fun. It's kind of campy, but
it's pure carnage. It's so ridiculous,
and
it's
the soundtrack
just like
it's like a really heavy Doom metal sort of soundtrack.
It's just like tech metal just dialed up to just 11. It's just insane.
Yeah,
it's a great soundtrack. Yeah, and it kind of just keeps you on the edge of your seat throughout. Like as soon as the music kicks in, you're a bit like, oh god, what's gonna happen?
Yeah,
pretty difficult as well. So
yeah,
that's cool. Doom 3 was good though. Doom 3 was, I quite liked it. I think it got critically not panned, but it wasn't particularly successful. But I thought it was good. It was pretty creepy.
I liked it, but that was a long time ago.
Action.
You know what game should be rebooted is Time Splitters 2. I would love to play Time Splitters 2 again. It's such a good game.
What about Time Splitters 1?
Don't remember that one. Don't remember that one at all.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I've got something else. I've got a physical item to go with the news of the John Carpenter wrote a Joker comic with Bleary.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I hunted that down this week just because I wanted to see it, feel it, smell it. So yeah, it's pretty cool that John Carpenter is writing it. It's really Bleary. That this Bleary thing's not working very well, is it? I'll put it right in front of my face. So obviously a great time for this to be released for him, because obviously Joker is probably as popular as he's ever been since Heath Ledger with the new movie. So yeah, it's pretty good. It's like a one shot. I don't know if there's going to be a follow up. I guess they were sort of waiting to see how popular it would be. It's another Joker story, which is like through the eyes of another character. So like another minor, brand new introduced character. So like a henchman of Joker, which they did with the Joker standalone comic. Brian Azzarello, is that his name?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty good. As I said, it's only single issue, so there's quite a lot crammed into it. But it's pretty brutal. I wouldn't necessarily say it's particularly John Carpenter. There's nothing I sort of read in there where I was like, that's very John Carpenter.
You can't hear the music. You need that music. That sound.
You can't hear the music. No, exactly. Yeah. You need. If you were listening to a soundtrack all the way through, it'd be good. But the art's really good. So yeah, I recommend picking it up, whether you pick it up, you know, physical or a digital copy or something, just to check it out, especially, you know, if you're a fan of John Carpenter, because it's quite a unique thing for him to have done. I don't think he's ventured into the world of comics before.
Yeah, he has. He has that... done a few comics. Because he has his own.
Right, okay.
It's called like Storm King or something.
Jesus.
Sandy King is... what's the name of it? Sandy Carpenter, she has a publishing company, like a small press comic book publishing company, and they put out like Tales of Sci-Fi, Tales of Halloween, and some bits and pieces. And I think John Carpenter does write a few bits.
So he's done it before. It's weird that's not more sort of in the public eye, because I've not really come across that ever, that he's ever done that. Are there any like comics of his properties as well?
No, I think it's all kind of like new IP, but I think it is small press. Like it's not done through like a DC or a Boom or anyone like that.
So there's something called Tales for a Halloween Night, which he's done before as well.
Yeah, I think there's an ongoing one as well. He did just like about like LA and some demons in LA and stuff. It looks cool. I've not read any of it, but yeah.
Cool. That's it. That's it from me. Okay. Short and sweet. Cool. Anyone else got anything they've seen this week?
Anything we've seen? Stuff and guff.
Stuff and guff. We'll go straight into that.
Well, so I'll tell you what. I gave up on Marianne. You know, the Netflix thing, because it was good. Have you seen any of Marianne, John?
I have not. Haven't seen it. It's on my list. So, but might not be anymore.
No. It's good. I mean, it's got some cheesy moments, but the scares, like the actual sort of build around the scares around this older woman who plays Marianne, this witch, are really well done and really just super creepy. But then the thing that's possessed this old woman leaves the body and goes to another body. And then that whole thing about how creepy she is as an actress is just kind of washed away. And it's like it loses pretty much all of the scariness completely and just becomes kind of deflates. So I kind of like lost interest. So I mean, maybe it gets better, but I'll never know now.
it might get better, but you know, I'll never ever know. I'll never give it a chance.
Something I'm gonna have to
how many episodes is it, Luke?
I think it's like eight or something. But I mean, like, I'd rather just stick on like a horror movie or something.
Eight hours, like 8 hour long episodes. Are they chunky?
Yeah, they're like hour long episodes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, no matter how long the series is, when they're an hour long, like settling down to watch that can be a bit of a chore if you're not 100% invested or enjoying it. So yeah, it was on my list as well. But yeah, maybe I won't give it a shot then. Who knows?
The first three episodes are pretty fantastic. Like, they've got some cheesy elements to them, but the scary bits are genuinely kind of scary.
What episode number did you decide to switch off on?
Well, I think I mentally switched off at episode 4 and then switched off physically like episode 6.
Oh, that's quite close to the end. Too.
Switched off physically. But
had it been taken in
the end of episode 6?
I don't know, because I just wasn't paying attention.
It's a bold statement. It's quite a bold statement to quit at 6, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm sitting there at 8.
I don't know if you guys get this though, like when you start watching a TV show, you've got like this compulsion to just like, you need to finish it no matter how much you hate it. It's almost like you need to draw a line under it as you've watched the whole series at least. I can not go back to another series. Like if I hated series one, I need to kind of watch it all.
Really?
No, it really takes something for me. I'm either one episode or one series type of guy. If that makes sense.
I do
I'll
quit
it off at that
point.
I do quit seasons sometimes, but I always feel like I'm missing out on something. Like I stopped watching American Gods in the middle of season two.
Yeah.
Because it changed quite a lot. I loved the first season, and then season two was just really not going in the same direction. But
I lost Brian Fuller, I think, the showrunner, right?
Yeah, and Gillian Anderson left with him, I think, and it just didn't have the same, I don't know. Maybe it got better towards the end, I'm not sure. Exactly. But now I feel like I'm missing out because I know there's going to be more, and I'm not going to go back to it. So I tend to agree with Ben a little bit that I do try and stick it out because I just got that fear that there's something great around the next corner.
Yeah, because
but
you could finish it.
Film or something. Like you could be wasting those hours away watching season two of Daredevil, and you're thinking, I shouldn't be watching that. Like this isn't as good as it was. Like I think it was the Netflix, the Marvel Netflix stuff, when I started to go the other way. When I was like, I should not feel like I need to plow through because I haven't enjoyed 30 hours of my life because of these seasons. Like these seasons, it's just not fun.
I managed to avoid that somehow. I didn't watch like any of the Marvel stuff. I watched Jessica Jones, and that was kind of it.
The first season of Daredevil and Jessica Jones are pretty good. But
I saw that as well. I saw Daredevil, but I didn't see Luke Cage. Didn't see who's the other guy? Iron Fist.
Yeah,
Punisher.
And I didn't watch any of Punisher, and I heard it was great.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either.
When they all came together as well, like as the Defenders, that should have been like unbelievably cool. But for some reason, I was like,
But I totally did watch, and that I think you, I don't know, because I've seen so much hate and slack for this film, and I really liked it. It was Wounds, which is, have you seen it? It's on Netflix, just dropped on Netflix. I can't remember the director's name. It's got Armie Hammer as a guy who works behind the bar. And there's a big scrap in this bar. It's in New Orleans as well. It's got like a NOLA flavor to it. And there's a big scrap in this bar. Someone gets glassed in the face and they sort of leave the bar and they leave this phone. And Armie Hammer takes it, manages to unlock it by seeing the smudges on the screen. So he sees like photos in the phone of like, well, I don't want to spoil it because it's only just out, but like creepy stuff. Like, and it's got some great cosmic... Got some great cosmic horror vibes. I think people don't like it because they were like, it's too weird. It doesn't have a sort of, it's not a conventional horror story in any way.
There's Dakota Johnson as well, right?
Yeah.
And I thought she was pretty good in
Zazie Beetz. Is it Zazie Beetz? Zazie?
Zazie Beetz? Joker?
Yeah, her. Yeah. But it's cool. It's really unnerving. I've kind of realized that the people who seem to have gotten really into it are the people who like weird horror, like the sort of the more Lovecraftian side of things. And people who don't like it are the people who kind of, I guess, wanted more more jump scares and sort of ghouls and stuff. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just me being a bit of a snob.
So we're looking at a 4.1 on IMDb at the moment. I mean, I know it's not a be all and end all.
Yeah,
but
that's what I mean. It's just getting like one stars all across the world on Letterboxd. And I watched it. And I thought, that was pretty great. And then I went on Letterboxd and I was like, how are people hating this that much? It's not bad. It's a good film. And it's got some cool monster stuff in it. It's got some cool lore. There's like some really cool, gross body horror stuff going on in it. It's awesome. It's a great little film. I don't understand the hate. I think I gave it like either 3.5 stars or 3. But even now I'm thinking back, I'd probably give it more of a 4.
Worth a go then, would you say? Would you say worth a go?
Yeah, out of this, then what was the other recent Netflix one that came out?
No, The Tall Grass.
Yeah, this one's better than In the Tall Grass, I thought. But In the Tall Grass is all right. But
we talked about In the Tall Grass last week, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see that? Did you see that, Joe?
Yeah, I'm afraid it wasn't for me.
Oh, you did?
I did. Okay. I didn't like it.
Okay.
Yeah, but I haven't read.
We were the same. We were the same.
Yeah. I just wanted it to be so much more. There was cool moments, but it didn't hang together for me. As soon as the, like, and this is not a spoiler because it happens in the first few minutes of the film, but as soon as the pregnant woman walked into the grass already calling the police, I was just,
oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, hold on, what? That seems a bit weird.
That was nuts.
And I was kind of checked out from there.
Yeah. Hello, excuse me. Yes, there's somebody in the grass. what's going on in people's head? Luke, you actually did visit the tall grass as well, right?
There's loads of tall grass where I live. And I went in the tall grass and then I died.
You get lost? Was it velociraptors?
Probably with the tall leaping grass. It's like, it's way, like, you know, you see like films where people are running through tall grass away from like serial killers and stuff. Like, it's no way. Like, it's just so thick. And you sort of, you can jump into it and like push it down. Do you know what I mean? But you can't run through it. Not like that. Not like the way people are zipping through it. It's the same. It's the same with like when you look at like thick woods, like genuine woods. If people are running through woods in the dark, I was walking my dog through the woods the other night, and I tripped over about four times, and I've got like a torch. It's impossible. There's no way people are running from serial killers. And then like when you watch it and you see like, and then you see like it's happened many times, and then you see like a woman running away from a serial killer and they trip, and everyone's like, oh god, as if you trip then. Yeah,
you would. Luke, speaking from experience.
Yeah, debunking horror tropes here on Horror Hangout.
You can't run through the bloody grass, mate. You're on your ass immediately. just on your back, just rolling through it.
Yeah. But other than that, I don't know. I just saw today's film that we're going to talk about.
So I didn't watch it all that much this week, you know. I saw the first episode of Watchmen last night, the series, HBO series, which is very, very different, you know, to there's a lot of interesting ideas that have been introduced that I want to see where they go with it. I think it does exist in the same universe as the film. It definitely exists in the same universe as the comic. But it's hard to say, because they're very similar, obviously, the comic and the film.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, I mean, what ending are they going with?
Exactly. So, at this moment, I'm not 100% sure. There are hints to some things, hints to other things. But it does seem to introduce some really interesting themes and a spin on, like, the way the masks were in the 80s to how they are now in modern day. It seems pretty cool. It seems like it's involving, like, modern day issues, like in the way they sort of deal with these things. So it seems pretty cool so far. It's got a score by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, which is brooding. Very nice. I don't think that's released until November, though, I believe, because I wanted to get hold of it after I watched the show. But yeah, so it's so cool, like so stylized. You know, like how the Snyder film was stylized with this sort of massive sort of yellow text, especially like in the titles and sort of various other things that come through. Like that, and it was almost like it was stylized in such a way that, and now I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound like it's a bit predictable, but I really liked it, is that you can almost see like these stylistic choices before they happen. You're like, I can imagine this happening now. It's because you're so used to like the stylistic choices of the graphic novel and the film, in the way the smiley face arrives, in the way like the little drop of blood on various different things.
Yeah,
they're very good at doing that, so it feels very much part of that graphic novel in the film. That's cool. Yeah, I've only seen one episode, but I like it so far. Very cool. And the only other thing I saw the Zombieland sequel. Double Tap. Are you guys fans of the original?
Well, I Zombieland? Am, but I can't remember. Yeah, I am. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, I like the first one. I didn't expect a sequel. I don't really know where they're going to go with it, but I haven't seen it
yet. I liked the first one, but I thought I'd rewatch the first one as well. And I laughed a few times, you know, even though I've seen it probably five or six times. I laughed a few times, and it is a good film, and there are good characters. And obviously the zombie stuff is very much sort of like in the background. It's kind of just there, and, you know, it serves a purpose, but it's not, despite the film being called Zombieland, it's not the be-all and end-all. But Double Tap was great. I really liked it. It's not 10 years later, you kind of feel like, do I want a sequel? Do I really care about these characters and what happens next? And turns out, yeah, I do. It's got some really good sort of really good jokes. The story's pretty great. Some good cameos. A lot of fan service for the original as well. Like if you're a big fan of that. So yeah, I recommend it. After seeing the trailer, I was a bit like, I'm probably going to skip out on it. Yeah. I was a bit like, I don't so much like the look of that. But then the reviews started coming in, and most of them were positive. Mm. So I thought, I'll give it a go. And pleasantly surprised, I'd say. I'd say it's pretty on a par with the original.
There's a couple of guys in the office who, maybe about 4 or 5 years younger than me, and they, when they talk about Zombieland, they talk about that as if that was their big, that was their Shaun of the Dead sort of thing. Okay. That was like a big movie to them. So they're like really excited to go and see it. So I think it'll do well.
I guess if it's just more of the same, then the first one was good enough for me to, that's worth the ticket price alone.
It pretty much is more of the same, It's more of the same. And there's not, they don't do anything like kind of ridiculous to make you go, oh, this doesn't really feel like the same universe. Or, and they explain things in pretty interesting ways, you know, because obviously 10 years later, coming, it kind of doesn't make a whole world of sense, especially like in an apocalypse scenario.
Yeah, good.
Cool. It's good. I liked it.
What about you, John? What did you watch this past week? Because you've been doing the 31 Horror Movie Challenge in October. How are you getting on with that?
Yeah, I've been trying to watch a new horror movie to me a day, and it's proven really, really difficult. The last one I watched was Happy Death Day to You, which I liked. I liked a lot. Have you guys seen the sequel and the first one?
I've seen the first one.
It's good. Okay.
I've not seen either of them, but again, they're kind of on my list of films I know I need to watch.
I really like the first one. It's a fun, inventive slasher. It's really good. I was expecting kind of the same as Zombieland 2, more of the same, and it's actually not really more of the same. It kind of goes more where the first movie was a slasher. This one's kind of more like a, it's still got the horror slasher elements, but it's more sci-fi in a weird way, and it tries to explain what's happening. Because it's no spoiler to say that really the first movie is Groundhog Day meets a slasher movie. That's what it is.
I found it was Groundhog Day meets Scream. It had the sort of the meta slasher sort of thing to it. Yeah.
So the second one tries to go into like the universe and why that's happening. And it's fun. It's good. I really enjoyed it. Not an instant classic, but it's absolutely worth the ticket price or the rental price. I really liked it. Other than that, I've had a couple of forgettable movies, unfortunately, on my 31-day challenge. The last one before that I really liked was Mayhem. Did you guys?
That's the Joe Lynch film.
Yes, in the office block, and I loved that. That's a very stylized...
What's the name from Ready or Not?
Samara Weaving?
Okay.
Is that her name?
Yeah. I've not seen this, but I've heard good things about this.
Yeah, it's really good. It's on Shudder, and it's absolutely worth a watch. I'm just checking. The only other thing was a Japanese found footage movie called Occult. Have you guys heard of this?
Oh, wait, what's it called? Occult.
As in occult or occult?
O-C-C-U-L-T. Okay. Occult. Yeah, sorry, the Scottish accent.
I've definitely seen the poster, but I've not seen that, no.
It's a difficult one to recommend because it gets pretty weird. And I don't know. I'm trying to think, how do I describe what happens? Basically, it's about this tourist attraction somewhere in Japan. It's a bridge. And it starts with a very, very shaky found footage cam of like a tourist video. They're walking across the bridge and someone starts attacking people. And it's the film is about the director of the actual film kind of puts himself into the movie, and he's making a documentary about this fictional attack on the bridge. And that's where it starts, and then it goes way off the rails into Crazy Town.
One cut of the dead.
Yeah, it does sound a bit like it could be a bit One Cut of the Dead-ish, doesn't it?
Okay, John's frozen on me. What about you?
Yeah. He's frozen on me as well.
He looks happy there.
He'll come back in a minute. He froze up a little bit earlier.
Did he?
He's back.
Oh, okay.
You're back, John. You froze for a second. Did we freeze?
Luke froze, but I could still hear you, Ben, the whole time. So that was good. You told me that I froze. I don't know where I cut off, but basically Occult is well worth checking out. If you like your films a little bit weirder, but it's definitely not for everyone.
Cool. Anything else from your Halloween horror nights that you kind of want to give a shout out to?
I think that's pretty much the favorite so far.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you're gonna watch before the?
No, I'm kind of I don't really have a list. I'm just working through movies as I see them or as they're recommended to me. So if there's any unusual ones that it's difficult because they've got to be new to me, first watches for me. So you don't know obviously what I've seen, but just ones that are coming up in conversation or ones that I'm seeing, I kind of just chuck them onto the list quickly. I don't know what my next one is. I haven't picked.
Well, I'd recommend checking out that Wounds because I'd be interested to get your opinion on it as well. Because I want to know if I'm just completely wrong about it, which I might be, but I don't know.
Yeah, I might give that a go as well, you know, Luke.
You may hate it.
Yeah.
It seems
you may hate it.
You may hate it.
You may hate it.
Yeah. But other than that, so I watched a little something called Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So, Ben, you got some information about it? We watched the same one, right? The 1978 version.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it was the 1978 version.
Oh, no. How many versions are there of this film? 28? 16?
There's four.
Oh, right. There you go.
Right. So we watched the one from 1978. So Invasion of Body Snatchers is a 1978 American science fiction horror film directed by Philip Kaufman, starring Donald Sutherland, Brooke Adams, Veronica Cartwright, Jeff Goldblum, and Leonard Nimoy. So it was released in 1978, remake of the 1956 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is based on the novel The Body Snatchers by Jack Finney. When seeds drift to Earth from space, mysterious pods begin to grow and invade a small town, replicating the residents one body at a time.
Cool. So Rotten Tomatoes is pretty favorable. It says, employing gritty camera work and evocative sound effects, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a powerful remake that expands upon themes and ideas only lightly explored in the original. 91%. User score is a little lower, 81%. IMDb is right in the 7.4 region. And it's, I'd not seen this one before. I'd seen the 90s. Is it Abel Ferrara? I've seen the 90s version when I was quite young. And that one really creeped me out. And I didn't really realize at the time, but I think that was one of the things that really made me love horror because I didn't know what I was watching, and it's kind of it was creepy and weird, and it kind of just sowed some seeds that some pods, you could say.
So that one's called the 90s one's just called Body Snatchers, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's another one with Daniel Craig.
Oh, is that an official remake, or is it like kind of like a loose remake? That's what I thought.
I don't know.
There's one called The Invasion. It's got Nicole Kidman in it as well. Is that the one with Daniel? Yeah. It must be.
I think that's the one. Yeah. And then there's the one in the school with Elijah Wood.
Oh, yeah. Faculty.
Faculty.
Again, these are sort of like very loose adaptations, right, of a similar sort of idea. So there were loads of these, weren't there, like around about this time, 50s horror movies getting remade. I mean, when you think about it, it's only like 20 years later. So obviously you've got The Thing, The Fly. Well,
Body Snatchers. Anything that's began with the.
Them body, body snatchers. Invasion of body snatchers.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
The Yorkshire version.
Have you seen the original? Anyone?
I actually haven't.
No.
To be fair, this version is the only one I've seen because I remember seeing it like years and years ago and being pretty freaked out by a few bits because there are a few bits which are. They're a bit creepy, aren't they? But yeah, I never saw. I didn't even know the 90s one existed. And again, I've seen The Faculty, but I didn't know that was.
It's not an adaptation. That was being a dick. It's not an adaptation at all.
Just being a dick, Luke, mate. You're always being a dick. Stop being a dick for 5 minutes. Take this podcast seriously.
Yeah, I mean, so what's your initial thoughts on rewatching it then?
After you, John.
I've seen this movie actually quite a few times, and I watched it. Fairly recently, I watched it probably at the start of the year because it's one of the ones that I sit and rewatch. I have a very, very small collection of physical like Blu-ray discs or DVDs. I don't have many, and this is one of the films that is in that very small collection. So it does come out quite a few times. I watched it when I was young. It was one of the ones
that I have this nostalgic love for.
Yeah.
And when Ben asked me to come on the show, I got another chance to watch it yesterday. So, I don't want to give anything away, but I'm quite a fan of this movie.
You could say you're a pod person.
Indeed, I am.
Swapped out for a person who loves this film. It's cool.
You've been swapped out. I was surprised, like going back to it, like how much it, like how much The Thing, like obviously it came out, what, four years later?
Yeah.
The Thing. Sorry, yeah. What it must have taken from this film, because there's so many, like, there are so like, similar themes, and it's very similar in
they
places,
pair
which
quite
is strange.
When they're together, to watch them as a double bill.
Yeah.
It's not that the body horror stuff as well, that I wasn't quite expecting there to be as wacky stuff in this film. It's a really wacky moment, but it's good. It's like, it's genuinely unnerving. Even if there's like a little banjo-lele playing as a little thing runs out. But it's cool.
Jesus Christ. I mean, we will get to that moment, but I didn't remember that moment from years ago.
Yeah.
But I've rewound that and watched it about four times because I was literally like what?
Yeah,
it's just the music at that moment. It's like, am I supposed to be laughing? Am I supposed to be, I mean, the reaction of one of the characters at that particular moment,
yeah,
is exactly how I would react no matter what the stakes were. If I was presented with this particular thing, I would have screamed, like, yeah, without a doubt, like, yeah, if you scream, you're 100% dead. That, yeah, turns up, ah!
It's we'll talk about it a little later on, I guess. I wonder if the music is it diegetic? Is it coming out of the thing's mouth? I don't know. Earlier, it's like playing that. Yeah, it's turned into a banjo. I mean, this film, the music, I've got to say that the soundtrack, I feel like that sound effect, that whoa, I can't make the noise, but whatever that is, has been used many, many times, sampled from this, because it's really kind of feels iconic, even though I've not seen this film before. And also, I really enjoy this 70s cinema verite style of filmmaking, where it looks almost like a documentary. You know, when it's sort of the camera sort of moving right into people's faces as they're trying to like look a bit over the camera, get the fucking way. And it's like, it makes it feel like weirdly intimate and weirdly real. Like, it's, there's the bits where like Donald Sutherland and Brooke Adams are flirting one off. They're like, it feels kind of intimate and kind of real. And
did you feel like Donald Sutherland was actually flirting with you? And you're like, what?
Often.
There are some great like 70s hairstyles and costumes are really like,
yeah,
looking good in this film. I forgot Jeff Goldblum was in this stuff.
Leonard
Nimoy with like some weird, what's that weird thing? He's got like a weird thing on his hand, like a leather.
Yeah.
Isn't that the kind of thing people use when they're doing archery?
They never explain it, which is great.
So
in the movie,
I was going to do this trivia, but not now. The reason he's wearing that is because his friend was wearing it or something, and he said, "I'm going to wear it because it will make my character different." Like, it's just a weird affectation of the character. There's no rhyme or reason.
Terrible arthritis in their hand, that thing you've got there, I'm going to wear it. I'm going to make something of. I'm going to wear it. It was for my arthritis. Give it air.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum is great. Donald Sutherland is very physical. There's lots of, I don't know, he's almost like a scarecrow that's come to life sometimes. Like a, sort of blowing,
he's a very ganky man, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. But he's kind of charming as well.
What I like about him in this film is that he punches things before thinking about anything. He just goes like, what's that bang? All right, back. Yeah. He punches like an old woman at one point. Obviously not.
Left. I laughed. Yeah, quite a lot,
actually. Yeah. It's a classic. Like,
it's a great moment.
Yeah.
He's just like a really natural actor, which I think you don't really get in leading men anymore. Everyone's kind of looks a little bit like a model or something nowadays in new films. And Donald Sutherland is not that. He's just like a regular. He seems like a regular guy that just is particularly good at acting. He doesn't look uncomfortable in front of the camera. He's an incredibly natural performance in all of his movies that he does.
Weirdly, kept he looks more Hollywood now. Now he's a bit older.
Yeah.
He looks way more like Hollywood.
He looks so fed up in this film, though. Like, just, he's like, he's tired of everyone's shit. He's just literally, oh, for God's sake. Like, there's a couple of bits where, like, people are arguing and screaming, and he's kind of, like, taking his jacket off and hanging up and going, like,
He's sad of him because Jeff Goldblum keeps slamming his hand on tables. What's his name? Yeah. Leonard Nimoy keeps saying, it's something to do with your relationship, I'm sure. And this, and what's the name keeps shaking her eyes around like a lunatic. It's just looking me straight.
Donald Sutherland's like, I've got a splitting headache. I can't be arsed with all this body snatching stuff. I'm over it.
Yeah. And Veronica Cartwright just cries. Like, she's a great on-screen crier. So while everyone else is doing that, she's crying now.
This was after Alien, wasn't it? It was after.
Well, Alien was 79, right? So they must have been getting shot really close together.
Yeah.
Alien really sort of changed the game in terms of production design, like aesthetic design. Because even this film feels kind of 70s, but then it seems like after Alien, sci-fi seems to level up in terms of like looks. And
where is it? It's San Francisco set, right?
It's a cool setting. I liked it. Okay, so we've got Donald Sutherland plays... what is he? So, he's a food inspector.
Yeah.
Well, he's like a health inspector, hey, this burger's shit. Too salty. Let a rat shit in this salt. basically, he's got a nose for rat turds, as we find out pretty early on. He's like, this is a bloody rat turd.
Yeah.
Brooke Adams plays the kind of the loving. Well, I don't know, because she's sort of a main character as well, really, for majority of it. She's a botanist, if that term is correct, and if I'm using it correctly, a botanist.
Yeah. Is that right? Just loves plants and shit.
Yeah,
right?
She does. Yeah.
Green
yeah.
finger.
She has an interest in botany. I'm not sure if it's ever. I just assumed actually that she was in the food health thing as well, but maybe she's not.
Yeah, no. I think you must. Yeah, you must be right, because they're in the same lab, right?
So just an interest. She got an interest in botanist.
She's a hobbyist.
Botany.
Yeah,
but she just works in HMV.
Loves a nice botany. and then Leonard Nimoy plays Dr. David Kibner, who's a psychologist that sort of he's got books out and he's sort of famous and he has people sort of like know him and they say, oh, my wife loves your books, you helped her out, you know, because she's a bit always like that one. But then we've got Jeff Goldblum. I'm not too sure what he is. He's a poet, right?
Yeah, he doesn't know it.
He wants to read his poetry, that's it.
Yeah.
Just a bad-tempered man, isn't he? And I think as soon as he's introduced, so his wife Nancy, as soon as she's introduced, I didn't even realize they were like husband and wife for ages until one of them went, this is my bloody wife. I went, what? I thought she just worked in like the mud bath place and he just just happened to, but yeah, there we go.
They own a mud bath spa. Chemistry. Yeah, by the way, mud bath, I mean, does that look nice? I mean,
it's so grim.
it looks like poo. Like, it looks very much like poo.
Well, even the shot, I mean, and we'll get to it when we get to that point in the movie, but even the shot of Jeff Goldblum walking into the spa, it just looks so dingy and horrible. I would not want...
Someone gets out of the mud bath immediately, and she immediately puts a towel on him. I just think, that's just...
You got
immediately put that straight in the wash. Surely you got to spray them down first and then put a towel on them. Don't just go.
When my dog, again, she's coming to this again, when she's covered in mud, you wash her down first and then put the towel on her. You don't get the towel right on her. Okay.
Nancy, we've spent most of our income this month on just all, washing all these kid towels.
It says here, Art Hindle as Dr. Jeffrey Howell. Who's that?
That's Brooke Adams' boyfriend or husband.
Boyfriend.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then Leela Goldoni is Catherine Henley. Who knows? We'll find out. Okay, so the plot, we start off with a nice shot of space or Mars or a moon or Jupiter. And there's like some... and there's like some space cobwebs or jellyfish or silk or living silk, and it sort of floats through space. It says on the solar winds, but I don't know if there is any. So like, there's no such thing as wind in space, is there? I don't think something would. I think once you get the momentum going, it will continue at that velocity. I don't think it can blow in space, but it does because it's a film. And it sort of floats across the space. And it lands sort of on Earth. And there's some really great special effects where there's like on the leaves, these little jellyfish things land and they kind of like spread their tendrils into the leaves. I don't know how they did that. And then from the plants, trees and that, they grow these little pods that kind of like olives, I guess. Olives with flower heads.
This is by far the best description of it ever. What film did you watch last night? And there's these bloody like silky tendrils, and they're on the olives. And the solar winds turned up. I mean, and they go, "Are you all right, Luke? Do you need to be? You need to stop smoking the old crack."
Yeah. So then the I think we start straight away with Dr. Food Inspector, Mr. Donald Sutherland, who sniffs up some trouble.
Yes. Well, Elizabeth picks one of those olives first before that. She's the first scene that we see because there's
a lot of sniffing in this film.
There is a lot of sniffing in it. But she finds one on a bush and picks one, and then there's a really, really unusual cameo in this movie right at the start. Robert Duvall is on a swing dressed as a priest.
Yeah.
And he never appears again.
It's his POV of like swinging back and forth. But I'm like, that's not the POV you have when you're on a swing. You focus on what you want to look at and you keep looking at it. But he's going, oh! Why is Robert Duvall dressed as a...
It's so weird.
That's the first time I thought of that since I saw it. I never again did I think, where's Robert Duvall, the priest? Is he going to turn up at the end and save the day?
That's a sign of a master filmmaker at work. The fact that Philip Kaufman made you forget that Robert Duvall is just randomly a priest at the start of this movie.
Jeez, I'm going to feel like I'm watching. I wonder if he's in the film anywhere else, just in the background. Swinging.
Yeah, that was the only reason I had to interject, Luke, is because we can't miss the fact that Robert Duvall was there. But then
He's not listed the restaurant. He's not listed in the cast, which is just a disgraceful.
Just a little cameo or something. Yeah. Elizabeth Driscoll.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Is her name? She sniffs up an olive on the tree and she's like, that's a weird olive. Plants, olives shouldn't grow on trees. They grow on bushes. So she's like, I'm gonna use my knowledge of botany to look into this. Meanwhile, across San Francisco, a certain fuzzy-haired sort of elf man with a mustache.
A fawn. He looks like what's that fawn from
Pan?
Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe. Mr. Tumnus. He looks like Mr. Tumnus.
Yeah.
It's really strange that the main character, I don't know the main characters in the 1958 version, but it's weird that the main character is like a health inspector dude. Like,
well, he should like know when something's not right. Do you know what I mean? He can
seems to just go, is it a rat turd? No, not interesting. All right, is it a rat turd? Yes.
Flicks into
this is my scene. He's trying to get people to eat rat turds as well.
Yeah, well, so he goes to this hotel, whatever, a big restaurant, and they're cooking up a storm, and he looks in this like big vat of soup, and he plucks this like thing out with some tweezers, special tweezers, He plucks out his tiny little thing and he goes, rat turd. And then, like, he goes, caper. By caper, did he mean like a, is that like a pepper? Like a peppercorn or something? I don't know. I don't
like
know what a caper little, is.
Like, that's like, yeah, there is such a thing as a caper, and I guess it looks quite similar.
Okay.
To,
well, he's like, if it's a caper, eat it. And the guy is like, I would just eat it. I mean, what's, I mean, it's been cooked for
it. I'd eat it to get him off my back. Yeah. You know what I mean? But, and then Donald Sutherland goes, waste not, want not.
Yeah.
He actually plays that. He plays that every time he goes into any restaurant. Rat turd or caper? Yeah.
He normally doesn't even have to use his tweezers. He just sniffs and the rat turds sort of fly up from plates towards his head. and then, he takes the rat turd, the caper slash rat turd with him to his science lab museum with... Elizabeth Driscoll's there. She's got a little plant. And then I think we get the initial transformation pretty quickly, right? With her husband. She's like, he's been acting weird anyway, but he's really gone off the rocker now.
He's like watching sport on TV with headphones on. Like, yeah. He just really don't want her to be involved. Can I watch? No, fuck off. Jesus.
Yeah.
Concentrate. So he's got a bit of a personality, I guess, to start with. I think, didn't he have a bit of a laugh? I can't remember. And then the next day he wakes up and he's basically fuming. He's just cold, distant, emotionless.
Yeah.
He's just being a bit of an ass.
Yeah. Then I guess she goes to work and then she tells him that he's been a bit off. And we get into the hint right away that Donald Sutherland and her are kind of, they like each other.
Yeah. So he's probably thinking, absolute result, that her boyfriend suddenly out of nowhere started being cold and distant and weird. He's like, God, that's really bad, isn't it? Yes. That's terrible. I can't believe it. I'll give you as much advice as you. Yes, bloody get it.
Yeah. But then she's like, I don't know how she jumped to this quite quickly. He's not my husband. She like feels his back. He's like, whoa, that's not his back.
Yeah, she says later on when she's in the bookstore, which kind of explains that, because she sort of hugs him from behind and sees the back of his neck, and she says something about a scar disappearing.
Oh, okay.
So you don't get
even that. If I was hugging my fiance from the back, it's like something was missing. I'd be like, "Where's that fucking gone?" I wouldn't be like, it's like thinking that she's a different person.
Like, you've been replaced. Isn't that like a? That's quite not. I was gonna say common. It's not common, obviously. There's some form of disorder where, like, you become convinced that you, like, a loved one or somebody you know has been replaced by an imposter.
That's
interesting. I mean, it might be a mental health issue, but you're like convinced that, you know. Don't watch films like this if you've ever had any thought like that. Bloody pod people! You know, the pod people everywhere.
Okay, so. She's complaining to Donald Sutherland about her husband, and he's like, well, it's very unlikely that he's a pod person. Very rare that happens. And he says, but if you go and talk to my mate David Kibner, he's written a book on is your husband a pod person or not? The pod person test. And so I think they're going to get to the book thing straight away. Feels like it's very early.
Well, while they're driving there, there's a crazy guy, isn't there?
Yeah.
And there's people running after him or something. I can't remember.
Well, he kind of turns up, bangs on the car window, and he says something like, you're all going to bloody coming. Die, God!
Yeah.
What was that, sir?
Yeah. He shouts like, they're coming, and then he runs off chased by a mob.
They go, they did come.
Yeah, they're here.
and you two didn't help me. Correct. Yeah, so he gets like killed off screen, but then they drive past and see his body. You know, he's been.
Isn't that weird? They're not trying to murder people, are they? The pod people. They're trying to
assimilate. What's the word?
Trying to join the party. They just want to get involved.
They just want everyone to just be the same, don't they? They want everyone to join their massive, great, big.
If they've got hive.
Ooh, hive mind. We're going to say, is that a hive mind? We've got a hive mind. That's the end of the podcast. Is it a hive? It's not a hive mind, is it? I guess they just all communicate in some way. not just because
they can later on they can pretend to be pod people and no one notices. So I don't think it's a hive mind.
Oh yeah, yeah, because they would have sniffed it out. I mean, if they were the other way around, Donald Sutherland would be able to sniff him out. He's not normal.
Is this a pod person or a rat turd or a caper?
Okay,
it's all free.
But there's a really annoying bit that happens just before that guy dies, when Donald Sutherland is telling a joke, which he never finishes ever, and you never hear the punchline off. Do you not? Does that not?
Yeah. So it's like there's an army in somewhere, and they've got a pony who keeps. Shitting, but they haven't got enough food. They've got low on food, but they've got a lot of shit or something. I think the punchline is something to do with they've got loads of shit and he's going to eat that or something.
Luke's stand-up comedy career has just taken off. Someone's going to listen to this and go,
oh, get him on Michael McIntyre.
Get him on Michael McIntyre. Get him on Live at the Apollo. Right, there's a joke about a bloody...
just ends up eating shit or something.
Eating shit or something. Work that one out.
Yeah, Donald Sutherland's always about people eating shit. Okay, so they go to the... It's like a book launch party. Is this right? This feels like I'm skipping a few things.
There's a few things that I do think we have skipped over, but I guess we can fill it in later. But there are lots of little scenes because we have the whole moment where Elizabeth's boyfriend, obviously, I think we mentioned that he kind of clearly becomes the pod person. We see people running through the streets. Elizabeth tells Donald Sutherland that her boyfriend's acting weird. And then they have like a little kind of date moment. She goes round to his house.
Yeah.
And they have quite a sweet little scene where he sort of says,
I love it when you shake your eyes with me, baby.
Yeah. But just before that, he says, like, oh, don't worry about it too much. My friend Kibner will be able to tell you if your husband's having an affair, got a social disease, or it has become a Republican or something like that. It's like the weirdest bedside manner for someone who thinks that something's going wrong with their partner ever.
Yeah, it's all like it's like character building and sort of lots of like building up those relationships and setting them up to later.
Yeah, it's quite off. It's quite a sweet little moment. And then there's the laundromat as well, which is quite a cool bit where he goes in with his coffee stained shirt.
The guy says,
"That's not my wife. That's not my wife." And you know that has a lovely payoff later on. And that I think that all happens before the book launch. But then I think that's it. I think that's book launch next.
Before the book launch, do we also see the bit where Elizabeth sort of follows her husband and sees that he's having these strange meetings with people? He's meeting up with a random group of people, and they're all sort of walking towards various random destinations and talking quietly and.
Yeah.
It's a bit weird. Like they're planning a weird orgy or something.
Yeah. So the book party, it's going all right as book parties go. David Kibner is a life of the party. He's signing his book or whatever.
He's going, look at my hand thing. Look at it. What's that all about?
Intellectual.
Everyone's going, whoa, man. And he's going, yeah, I don't even know what it does.
It helps me read. So Jeff Goldblum's there. I think he's trying to do a poem or something. He's a bit upset because Dave Kibner won't listen to him, he's jealous of Dave Kibner's success and hand glove thing. And
Let me do a poem at your book launch. Well, no, sorry, it's my book launch. You fucking twat. he just hates him. He's jealous of his hand. He's jealous of his hand holster. That's what it is.
Hand holster. So there's a woman there who's like, that's not my husband. And we're getting like a recurring theme starting to build up a bit more now. There's more like people who are saying, he's not my husband. But Dave Kibner's like, this is just an emotion, like you're trying to separate yourself from him and you're inventing this thing in your mind. Dave Kibner, I think he's the most annoying man in this film, just constantly saying, he's like constantly playing the psychiatry card.
He's constantly playing the like cynical.
Where
all of the evidence points towards the fact that yes, there is an invasion of these body snatchy creatures. He's like, well, it might be something else. It might be something else. Well, no, it's definitely this. We've seen the double be created. He's like, probably someone else.
I think you're psychologically making these tendrils come out into my hand.
Yeah. And he gets, and when he finally gets body snatched, he goes, all right, there we go. Yeah, bloody hell, prove wrong.
I think I'm inventing this in my mind to stop. Yeah. So he gets these people to hug, and he essentially dooms that woman. But I mean, they're all doomed anyway, aren't they? Really, dooms that woman. He makes her hug the pod husband, and then it's all the mud hut stuff.
They go outside with Elizabeth and Donald Southern character Matthew, and they have a little kind of therapy session outside when Donald Sutherland sends Jeff Goldblum away. He's just like, just leave us alone.
Do me a favor. Go away.
Yeah. Which he does immediately.
Yeah.
And then we go to the, and then Goldblum goes, when he leaves, he goes to the mud bath, yeah, place.
So the mud bath, as we said already, it's kind of gross. There's a fat man who gets out of his dingle hanging out. It's all muddy. And the towel dry that off, and then the rest of him
dingle.
and then they're all sleeping off, and then what's her name goes to check on him, because she's like, his dingle was very muddy, better check on him.
he's under like a towel, and she goes, you'll bloody suffocate underneath there.
Yeah. And she pulls it back to reveal, so I'm a bit confused. So this is his original body, and once the thing has sort of cloned you, it sort of decomposes you or something. Is that like what's happening? Yeah. Okay.
And that's right.
So his body's part way through the decomposition process, I think. So it's sort of got like the white tendrils.
So you think that Goldblum is already a pod? No, I don't think Goldblum's a pod person yet at this point.
The other guy. The guy out of the thing. Do you know what I mean?
It's weird though, because like, I was a bit confused by this, because
then it becomes really Goldblum. It's got like the nosebleed and the eyes, it like links to him. So I kind of always assumed it was him.
Oh, okay.
When you fall asleep, like your consciousness is taken by that and it replicates. It's weird, cause it's not really body snatching, is it? It's like replicating you.
Yeah, backup, like a data backup. Just making a backup.
Yeah. Right? Just making a backup, like body snatching. I thought, like, you know, it body infects backup. You or something, and you become like the host for whatever that thing is. But it's not really. It's a much more complicated way of doing it. I just think these gelatinous alien things need to go back to the drawing board and go, we got to come up with an easier way of doing this.
Wait, so just to make, so that thing on the bed was the thing trying to become Jeff Goldblum? Is that what it was?
Well, I think so, and I could be wrong as well, because it does, it can be a little bit confusing, but I thought that was like a pod, it originally started as a flower pod, I guess I don't know how it happened in such a brief period of time, but it was sort of absorbing some Goldblum essence and becoming him.
I think you're
right,
which is why
it bled,
Jeff Goldblum has got like some flower on his face.
Yeah.
And that's like what happens when they start to get
That's the classic first sign of being body snatched, is having a flowery face.
Bacon, honestly. So the thing is bleeding from the eyes or the nose or whatever it is. And then what's the name, calls the police, I think, or is that around? No, it's not yet, is it?
What happens? Because Matthew, which is Don Sutherland's character, realizes that Elizabeth is in trouble. Mm. He kind of comes to a bit of a leap of faith, I think, there. But obviously he sees it and thinks that it resembles Goldblum or something, and people are talking about people being replaced, and that's not my wife. So I think he puts two and two together and thinks that Elizabeth is in trouble. So he tries to get hold of her. Mm. But then Goldblum is obviously got his flowery face, he's a bit tired, he decides to lie down, and there's a great moment where Veronica Cartwright is over looking at the body, Goldblum's closed his eyes, it opens its eyes, she screams, wakes up Goldblum, and then there's that lovely moment when the eyes close immediately when
Goldblum become is conscious again.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's almost like it's becoming him, but it's also taking his consciousness before.
Yeah.
And are we made to believe that when it replicates you, that the original body then decomposes in the same way that the original one had sort of been created?
Yeah, because you see it later. You see it with Elizabeth later. Yeah, when he not to jump ahead, but
yeah. Okay, but so Donald Sutherland goes to rescue Elizabeth. He breaks into the house, and then he sees it making a version of her, and then he steals her body away.
What is that area that's making the version of her? And it's like a weird indoor
garden sort of thing, isn't it?
Garden thing. Yeah. I'm like, what? What's that, mate? It is a bit.
There's like a clone. Ben's kinda, like, what's that? What's the garden?
You've
kind of
got
apartment.
You've got. It doesn't seem. Again, I think these aliens haven't got it all right because it feels like a lot needs to work. Like there needs to be like a connection. It needs to be on a plant, right? Before the pod needs to grow somewhere in order to do it. So how's it getting indoors?
Yeah, that's the only confusing thing to me about like how the pod actually works, because in certain cases it looks as if the tendrils are connecting to the person that they are snatching, and in other cases they're not even close. Everything else I think makes some kind of sense, but that's the only bit that I'm not 100% sure about.
Maybe there's like no real consistency with it, so that we're made, you know, they're adaptable.
Of the body snatchers. I don't know what.
Very confusing, mate, yeah.
Okay, so as he sort of rescues Elizabeth, takes a body, he snatches the body, ironically enough, and he runs away with it, like a weird goon. And then so the husband finds out and then calls the police or something. And then when they go back, they've kind of hidden the clone, but they've kind of decorated the plant pots and stuff to look like a face. And have kind of made it look like, what's the name of just seeing the plant pots?
Ah, come on.
He did that really. It's really impressive, actually, how quickly he managed to do that, and it looks quite impressive. But as a garden, as like an indoor garden, it's sort of useless because it's quite a big room, but the floor is so thick with plants and stuff. Like, there's no way you can go into that room. Can't enjoy it. You just have to. It's just a room that's just been taken over by plants.
You just gotta look into it and go. Looks really lovely in there. That's it.
You know how like you get like.
I wish
pools?
I could go in.
Is it like an indoor garden, like you can just go in and sort of relax and then leave, or is it more like an aquarium, like they've just put a thing of grass, like a terrarium? That's what it's called, a big terrarium, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. He saves Elizabeth, and then I think for most of the rest of them, is them running away. Oh no, there's a really good body horror bit at Matthew's flat.
Yeah, so they also like congregate at Matthew's flat, don't they? So Jack and Elizabeth. No, wait, who? Yeah, Jack, Elizabeth, Nancy. They all congregate that's right.
Matthew's at Sutherland's house. Yeah, and then they sort of spend some time trying to convince Leonard Nimoy that there are duplicates being made, which he refuses to believe.
Nope.
With his little hand thing.
I can't see any. Your eyes are closed. Nope.
they take the flower to be examined, like at the health department at one point as well, didn't they? They didn't find any like records of it. Matthew starts phoning people up, trying to alert various government agencies. He's like, I've got a man on the inside. There's someone I know at the CIA. Don't worry about it. He'll sort it out. And calls up, and then they sort of know it's him before he even says.
Yeah. Like, he's all right. Calling up.
All right, who's that? It's Matthew, isn't it? Just stop calling us. God, you're a health inspector. Get back to the rat turds.
Get back to the rat turds. Yeah, I mean, that was a tagline for this film. So then to the hiding out. Okay, so Matthew feels like quite sleepy. He's like, I'm gonna have a little nap in my garden.
Which is on a roof.
Yeah, it's got a
Why roof. Aren't there any gardens in normal places? Well, I've got a garden in the front room. I've got a garden in the bedroom upstairs. And I've got a garden on the roof. What's that in the back? Just a load of shit.
This is maybe my favourite scene, when he's having a little nap in the deck chair. And there's like five or six pods. There's like a bunch of grapes, like a bunch of pods. And then it kind of looks at him, the plant, the flower thing. And then the flower head thing turns into like a man's head. And then it kind of births them out. And it's weird. It's really quite effective. He kind of pushes himself out. And then he's all the bodies. And it's not just his body. There's like a duplicate of the other people who aren't anywhere near them.
Yeah. This is the bit why it's confusing, because he's obviously connected with a tendril to the nearest pod, but the others are all inside. And I think Nancy is still awake. She hasn't even gone to sleep. So that's a little bit confusing, but it is such an effective scene. It's a lovely kind of icky, slimy, rubbery kind of version of Donald Sutherland being worked out.
This really did remind me of The Thing, like the practical effects here were very, you know, gooey and horrible. And like this sort of facial expression, which I think is, we get a lot in The Thing and we get a lot in this, which is like, like that sort of face. It's horrible. I don't like it. I feel I was looking away at that point. Oh, I don't like it. But that was pretty gruesome. So
before he gets completely conscious, goes through, the crying girl wakes him up by crying really loud. She's like, and he goes, oh, okay, what's up? And then they realize it's there's fucking garden of, they're everywhere. They're like fucking ants, people made of grass and stuff on the floor. So they call up the police, maybe. And then the police know it's him, and then he starts to...
He smashed the life out of the doubles first. He gets like a garden, is it like a hoe or something?
Yeah, it's harsh.
He just like basically smashes the life out of his Donald Sutherland double, cracks him like a fleshy Easter egg, and just all the goo just comes out,
It's brutal, that scene.
Yeah.
It hasn't dated, I don't think, as well. It's still just as cringeworthy as it probably was back in the day. It's rough.
I think this is the first time where the hive mind is like in pain or something, because it starts screaming. Is that when you first start to, starts to do the pointing, screamy thing? You. And then, so at this point, we know that the whole city is pretty much after them, right? They're running around. There's a lot of footsteps, like clickety clackety everywhere. And I don't know how to get away from the flat, actually.
They get away from the flat. They hide underneath this like a staircase when all the pod people like run down past them.
That's his technique. They manage to get away. Under some stairs. Yeah, I think he does.
Little eyes poking through that.
Oh, mate. But then, as they're running away, it's kind of gets to sort of a chaos point. There's the little dog with the face of a homeless man who sings banjo music.
So earlier on in the scene, Matthew like sort of speaks to a guy who's in like the park playing banjo. He's got a dog sat with him. So we're kind of introduced to that character very briefly. But then later on, well, they're all trying to like blend in with the pod people, all trying to be, don't show any emotion. As soon as that happens, they're kind of walking along, shuffling along.
This
dog
just
goes bounding up to them. This dog with a human face. Like, I mean, you can tell it's like a practical effect where they've like stuck a latex mask or something on a dog, but there's this perfect moment where the dog like licks, like its tongue comes through the mouth and like licks its nose. But then the bizarre thing is that the banjo music from earlier is like playing as some weird twisted soundtrack in the background. It's horrific. As I said, I had to watch this moment about four or five times, so I was like, what on earth is going on? Because it's just so unnerving, because the dog kind of like bounds over, doesn't it? Kind of goes And then Elizabeth screams, which, you know, you would do in that moment. What would you do if
my dog ran up to me with cat's face?
Your face. Oh, cat's face. A cat's face.
I'd scream. What if it was singing banjo-lady music? I'd be like singing along to it.
And then one of the pod people like screams, and Donald Sutherland gives her a knuckle supper.
That's a good noise.
Pretty good. He was waiting that whole film to. He's like, soon I'm gonna get to punch an old lady. I can't wait. I can't wait. It's gonna be whoever it is.
He's got a lot of pent up aggression though, because in the scene immediately before that, he kills Jeff Goldblum with a dart in the back of his head, and at that point, he hasn't, like, he's really the idea of people being duplicated and taking on like their friend's identity and actually living and walking around is still quite new. And he has no hesitation. As soon as he thinks that they're coming in, he grabs a dart
and immediately stabs him in the neck with it, essentially.
It's very angry and vigilant about things pretending to be something that it's not. Like, at the start with the caper and the rat turd, we realized right away what his character was all about. This isn't a caper. And when he sees the Jeff Goldblum, he's like, this isn't a caper. This is a fucking rat turd. He just, it all what comes out.
What a weird weapon to choose, though, and it's dark.
Yeah.
I feel like I look around. I keep looking around, you know, for more stuff rather than going, dart, that'll do. A dart. This tiny little drawing pin. Yeah.
That's what I mean. He's been thinking about this for a long time. It's like, that dart, I'm going to take down one of my co-workers or someone who comes in here with that. He immediately goes for it.
Yeah. And he didn't say any puns. 180, bullseye, nothing. He just goes, ah!
What an amateur.
What an amateur, yeah. So I think so. There's a lot of running away now. The four of them, the two couples, and then they split up. They get into a taxi. I think the whole thing is, I mean, it's quite well done. I mean, it does go on. I felt a little bit too long at this point. I kind of feel like I needed it to wrap up a bit quicker. But they run away to get in a taxi, and the taxi driver turns out to be one of them. And then they find a factory where they're sort of mass producing. Oh, there's a weird bagpipes music bit that's like plays is that Amazing Grace or something with bagpipes. Yeah. I guess to signify that it's like a global endeavor, like it's Scottish and American, like it's gone everywhere. They're mass producing these olives. it's a really weird moment.
Is that some bagpipes? Yeah, it's got Scotland as well. It's gone over there.
So, they love olives over there.
They take speed at one point as well. Don't they try and stay awake?
Yeah, because if they fall asleep, they will be got or something. Like when you say they'll fall asleep, they'll be got. Did he mean if they fall asleep, they will crumble into dust, or did he mean they will just be caught by?
I think it's like that when they're asleep, it's easier for it's pretty much the only time that the pod people can replicate. That the pods can replicate you. So like you could be asleep and it looks like it doesn't have to touch you, but it can kind of like, I don't know, where it needs to see you or just know you're there.
Sniff you.
But it can like
stick it. It's all thematically sort of in there. Yeah. I mean, maybe because it does get Elizabeth and I think she just falls asleep and then like she like melts, like crumbles.
Yeah, that's when he's enjoying the bagpipe music. He hears the bagpipes on the ships and goes to enjoy that. And by the time he comes back,
Elizabeth is asleep. He's like inspired and he says, I love you. And then like they're hugging and then it's pretty gross, actually. I mean, her face kind of contorts inwards. So she's just like dreaming up something funny. And then it sort of just goes all the way in.
Like it's grim.
Yeah, it's really well done.
He's even more angry now. He's even more angry. He's like, the one person I loved is dead. I'm going to dart some motherfuckers tonight.
I think he sort of goes kamikaze, doesn't he? Kamikaze on the factory.
Yep. So he goes pretty much apeshit on the factory, burns it down. That pretty much all he does, burns it down. Isn't it like Elizabeth's double, like wandering around naked as well?
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
I love his little delicate act work. That's how he burns the place down. And you'd think.
And you'd think that
he would like have a big moment where he just swipes his axe, but he's just like tapping it. He's tapping each little rope. It's lovely.
I read that all that stuff with him sort of flying around on the walkways, he didn't want any stunt double. He just wanted it to be sort of real and authentic. And if he did the same thing in Don't Look Now, you know, when he's hanging off the...
Oh, yeah, that's such thing. That scene is scary in Don't Look Now,
I think I've read that he was... Maybe we've talked about this. I think he was actually sort of hanging off for dear life. I think he just likes to do that kind of thing.
He's a bit of a dad. I didn't know that.
What a guy. But what happens at the end? He just says, I'm tired now or something. He just goes to sleep or... He just kind of accepts the futility of it all.
He runs away from the burning pod central place and hides under the pier. And there's a moment when like a cop or someone pops his head through a hole in the pier, which he's underneath, and he's sort of scanning around. And then the torch beam comes over, goes right into right into camera.
Right.
And we go to white, and then it cuts to the next day.
So I guess we're made to assume that he's, you know, he's going to fall asleep eventually anyway.
There's no way of escaping this.
No.
Yeah.
But then, when the next day comes up, we're made to believe it is just still Matthew as a human, because he's very shifty and almost like trying to fit in with, you know, the pod people. So he's back working in the health department with all his duplicated employees. They're all sort of like walking in one direction. And he does look a bit shifty, doesn't he? He looks like, better fit in with these lot, have I? Oh, yeah.
He plays this so well because you can read it both ways. Like when you know what the ending is, it's a great performance, this, actually. Yeah.
Well, so it's one of your favorite horror ending to a film, right?
It's got to be, because then he walks out with all the pod people. Then I think you were about to say, and then outside is Nancy, and she spots him from across the sort of courtyard, thinks that he is still
his name.
Yeah, and runs across, and then there's just that moment when you don't know exactly what's going to happen, and then he raises his hand, points at her, and lets out the shriek.
Yeah.
And then we almost zoom right into like his nostril almost, but then it changes at the last minute and it goes into his mouth.
He knows that it's not a caper. Like yeah. It just ends on that. They stick with that all the way through. He is the sort of the food investigator.
How did Nancy stay human then?
Well, she obviously just didn't sleep, I guess.
Yeah.
She's absolutely. Her bags under her eyes are bloody massive. She's. I'd sleep for the ages. Matthew, help me. Yeah. So there we go. I mean, it's a pretty horrible ending, because I think at one point as well, we see like children getting like led off for what essentially looks like to be duplicated.
But they don't make it sound like it's that bad. Like they make it sound like you'll still have your consciousness. Like you just won't like
have it.
It won't be as fun. It'd be like everything.
Are they just saying
nice,
that?
Even cute. Well, yeah, might be, but it is so like you'll get to explore space. And you're like, what? You didn't say that before.
Are they just saying space? That though? Because are we made to think that you actually will have your consciousness, or have they just duplicated your consciousness? So you essentially are dead. But
yeah, but then I mean, I guess that's kind of left up to
us. You'd go for this, wouldn't you? Luke's sold. Luke's like, if this was an option, I'll probably just
Leonard
be duplicated.
Leonard Nimoy says you'll get to sail to the winds of Jupiter or something. I don't know. He says something like,
I mean, that'd be all right. But at the end, it'd be like going on holiday. You know, when you go on holiday for ages and then you think, I just want to come home and just chill out and watch Netflix and eat Ben and Jerry's. It'll be like that, but you'll be in Jupiter. There's no way to get home.
But I think it is through the mind, right? So like you just experience it through other parts of the collective consciousness.
There's no travel involved.
I don't think so. I don't know.
I haven't done it, Luke.
I haven't done it yet.
But yeah. you'd never be able to eat olives again, though. That would be like eating your own.
Yeah.
So
well, I'm not a big fan of olives. So.
Well, you're fine then.
You're right.
Yeah.
You'd be fine. This is a perfect world for you in the Invasion of the Body Snatchers world.
Yeah. Okay, so then it ends. There's also no credits music, interesting enough.
You're silent.
Yes.
What does that represent? Does that represent the sheer void, the empty void, what planet Earth has become?
Maybe, yeah. Like there's no fun anymore. No, it's not any fun anymore. I've got some trivia if you guys are ready for it.
Let's have it.
Okay. Number one. Donald Sutherland was hit by a Volkswagen Beetle while filming a shot of Matthew and Elizabeth running. He fell onto the windshield and was able to see the driver saying what? He got hit by a car and he saw the driver, and the driver looked at him and he said something. What did he say?
Donald Sutherland? Question mark. Exclamation mark.
Yeah, that was going to go somewhere down that line as well.
Well, he actually said, oh my God, not you. Because he was aiming for someone else, I think.
I was aiming for that other gangly scarecrow man with tightly knit curls.
Number two. Harry, the homeless banjo guy's banjo playing, was performed by the frontman of what band?
Oh.
I would have never got this.
The Yardbirds.
Oh, I mean.
That was 60s.
Who was the what was the banjo player called? Was it Jerry something? No, I don't know. I don't know.
Was it I was about to say, what's his name? But he plays the flute, doesn't he? Who am I thinking of? Flute man.
Pavarotti. I don't know. Well, okay. Go on. If you got one in you.
Last one. Is it the band? The band Yes. I don't know.
No, both all good answers, really. It actually is a guy called Jerry Garcia, the front man of the Grateful Dead. You pretty much got it, John.
Grateful Dead.
Yeah. I've never really listened to Grateful Dead, though. Maybe they're good. Okay, number three. Donald Sutherland was paid something between $200,000 and $300,000 to be in this film. How much did Brooke Adams get?
Oh,
God. This is going to be a controversial topic, isn't it?
Yeah, this is going to be really...
I'm going to go for... If he got paid $200,000, I'm going to say she got paid $20,000.
Oh, man. I'm going to say it's unfortunate because I think that Brooke Adams is incredible in this, and I can't believe she wasn't in more stuff afterwards. She was in a few things, but she's an amazing performance. But it was probably like half what Donald Sutherland is. And maybe I'm being too optimistic.
So here's the thing. So she got paid the same amount as Jeff Goldblum and Leonard Nimoy. I don't know if that changes your answers.
Okay. Ah, okay.
Yeah, maybe a bit more then. $50,000?
There we go. Okay. John?
I'll stick with 100. She deserves 100. She deserves as much as Donald Sutherland, but let's say 100.
They all got paid $25,000.
Oh! Christ, first guess was good, and I was trying to...
Yeah.
Should have stuck with my instincts.
28, so.
Number four, Don Siegel, the director of the original Body Snatchers movie from the 50s, appeared in this film as what?
I actually know this.
Was he the taxi driver?
Yeah, he was the taxi driver.
Yeah, Well done. John, you knew that, I'm guessing, from your studies in this film.
I don't know how I know that detail. I know another detail as well, but I'm going to save it just in case it's the next question. I don't know if there's more.
Okay, so number five. Last question. Who would win in a race between Brooke Adams and Donald Sutherland?
Donald Sutherland's got like the longest legs that I've ever seen on a human man. So no disrespect to Brooke Adams, but Donald Sutherland can get down the street in 3 strides.
But Brooke Adams was running in those high heels though, so I'm going to say that she could get it. Okay. She was keeping up with him.
So here's what it says. Brooke Adams challenged Donald Sutherland to a foot race during one of the film's many chase scenes. After Philip Kaufman yelled cut, they just kept going, and Adams won in a dress and high heels, no less. Yeah, I noticed that. Because I was thinking, like, the amount of times when I've been out with people and the girls, like, can't move because they're on these high heels. But there's a scene in this where she's, like, sprinting, like, incredibly fast in high heels.
It's over, like, grass as well.
And then she steps on something, like, the next scene, and it, like, twists her ankle. Yeah, so I think you both got all those right. Well done. So we need to rate the films now. John, did you want to go first?
Well, mine's going to be quite high. I think it's going to, this is really a classic that I love. I love the fact that it goes through like a bunch of different types of horror. It starts like really intimately, and it's like the question of whether or not her partner is who she thinks he is. And then it gets like wider and wider. It becomes like an alien invasion. It becomes like a site-wide conspiracy horror. It's a zombie movie in places. Yeah. They can get you while you sleep. Like, there's so many bits of it that I think other movies would just cherry pick that one element, and it would be the whole running time would just be that one horrific element. And this has got like a lot going on. I'm not going to go crazy and give it like an A+, but it's a solid A for me. I love it. I think it's a classic. I know that's going to be high compared to maybe what you guys think. It has dated a little bit, but I've got that nostalgic love for it.
That extra quality. Yeah,
so I'm quite biased, but yeah. A.
What about you, Ben?
yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I think it's definitely up there. I think the way it's obviously influenced other horror films as well, even though it is a remake, of course. Saw a lot of The Thing in it. Also things like Nightmare on Elm Street, where, you know, you don't go to sleep because you'll be gut. I mean, that's not too common in horror films, so this is probably the only other time I've seen it. So I guess it influenced that in some way. Some really great performances, some genuinely horrific moments, probably one of the most iconic final shots in horror slash sci-fi ever. This film probably doesn't get as much love as it should in terms of, you know, being one of those classics. So I'd probably go a little bit less than John. So I might go for an A- on this one.
Yeah, I think I agree with Ben. I'm going with A- as well. I feel like it's, you can't really complain about any of this film. It's just everything about it is like pretty spot on and classic. I mean, the only thing I would say is like, I feel like there's a little bit too much running and chasing. I feel like I could have just done with a little bit less of that. I felt like it just needed a bit to move towards the end a bit quicker. But yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, that pointing and screaming thing has been used in various ways throughout the years. And it feels like this film's influenced a lot of films in other ways. And the whole idea of the pods recreating you is pretty creepy. I'd like to rewatch the 90s version again, just because that really did get to me as a kid. So I'd like to see if that still holds up. Maybe it doesn't, I don't know. But yeah, cool. All right, so John, you do horror stuff as well as talk about horror movies on this podcast just now. Where can we send people to check out more of your stuff, see pictures of you and that kind of thing?
They can go to johncrinan.com, or I'm on Twitter and Instagram at John Crinan, which is johncrinan.
Cool. And Ben is at Ben Errington.
Is it underscore at Errington? Ben. Sorry, at Ben underscore Errington.
Cool.
Come on, Luke.
I'm at Luke of Condor, and that's Condor spelled with a K. So this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Camera for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the guys in the Facebook group. Thank you very much for joining in our little conversations and whatnot. And thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rating review in iTunes. I was going to say, both of you guys have worked on a horror podcast recently, horror fiction podcast called The Nest, the serialized horror audio drama that's going to be available on the... If you go to your podcast feed and search for The Other Stories, and then it should come out. I think it starts next Monday, I think. Is that right?
Sunday. So Sunday the 27th, running all the way through to Halloween. 5 episodes, serialized fiction, horror, presented by The Other Stories. Should be fun. Looking forward to it.
Cool, yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks to John again. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a writer dude. And yeah, cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure.
Great.
Bye.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.